Thank you for joining another episode of Tech and Man Presents, where we bring you the best insights from today's leaders and experts in technology. Today, we will be speaking again with David Strom. David has been on the podcast multiple times and is a great friend of the podcast as well as a personal friend. David, welcome back.
Nice to be back here, Sean.
Indeed, indeed. So, David, I love the fact that we always have a lot to talk about. And today's topic is no exception, right? So we're going to be talking chatbots, ChatGPT, generative AI, and David, being the industry expert that he is going to help lead the discussion. So David, with that, where would you like to start, sir?
Well, I think it's just crazy how much has been written about it, how quickly there are some sources that say 100 million people are using chatbots with any kind of regularity. I have no idea whether that number is accurate or not, but it's certainly a sobering thought. Google and Microsoft have their own versions. Microsoft has built it into Windows, which is a scary, scary thought. Google has its Bard interface. There's all sorts of complementary tools that are going to be feeding these things. And of course, we're here to talk about security because that's our primary interest.
Right.
And while it's great that we have this natural language interface and people can interact with it by just typing in stuff, it's kind of scary. And I go back and forth between Skynet, the world is going to be in a hot nuclear wasteland, nuclear warming. Let's use that term.
There you go.
The true nuclear warming. Versus cures for diseases, and one is going to be singing Kumbaya, and it's going to be wonderful for society. So I think it's good to be skeptical about it, and we both have had personal experiences where it's answered us in kind of curious, like third grade knowledge senses. But I think we, as an IT security person, you have to look at some threat modalities. First and foremost, you can impersonate security experts and provide all sorts of crazy advice about something that can be used against your enterprise. So, I mean, that's a problem. And sort of aligned with that, you could craft all sorts of more realistic sounding phishing lures because it can translate text. I mean, we think of it as just English only, but it's now operating in all sorts of foreign languages. And that can really be used to fool even a careful user that's trying to screen their emails. And the security consultants have used it to create very tailored phishes that are very hard to distinguish, which is certainly chilling. And then you can also use it to write code, and people have been doing that, and then they just copy and paste that code into actual applications without vetting it, which I think is like holding a loaded gun to your head. You got to be crazy to do that, because you can create all sorts of malware and just really mess up the works. And probably the most dangerous is that you can use the AI to poison the language models and data collections that they're being used to form queries from. So no one's really thought about that one yet. And people are uploading all sorts of data to these things willy-nilly. And it could be good data, it could be bad data, it could be private information that you want to keep confidential. So there's lots of potential impacts on enterprise security.
David, I couldn't agree more. I think one of the things that you mentioned got me thinking along the lines of, well, really two things, right? One is the ability for a tool like ChatGPT, for instance, to be able to help craft a phishing email and tailor it to a particular industry or to a particular person.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's certainly within its abilities right now.
It is very much within its ability to do that. But then the other thing that I think is equally concerning is and I'm not saying that people would necessarily do this, but there's the potential, let's say, for a security analyst, a security professional to use ChatGPT to come up with a recommendation for a client, right?
Right.
Let's say you are crafting an incident response plan for a small client. They're not going to bill very much. And so you're really just doing this as, hey, here, let's get you something. And in most cases, you do have a template that you use. But if you wanted to tweak that, right, it's very easy to put that request into something like Bard or ChatGPT and have that respond. And then,
yeah, with something customized. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So we're looking at this from a number of different angles, right? There's there's the overall concern that someone could be taken, right, or fall for a phishing email or some other security attack. But then there's also the possibility of, you know, taking shortcuts with how you approach cybersecurity.
Well, I think any output from the bots has to be looked at very carefully. And not just with some grains of salt, but with some truckloads of salt. I mean, you really got to be very present, not like just read it over casually, like, and while you're doing something else, like really focus on the output that you're getting from it and make sure that it makes sense to you. And if we've seen situations like Microsoft's bot gives you references, URLs to back up what it says. Well, you click on those URLs and they're bogus URLs. So what good is that? It's like the worst reference library imaginable.
And to piggyback on that, before we started recording, I was telling you of just a personal query that I did with ChatGPT where I asked it to list the companies that are on the NASDAQ headquartered in Georgia. And all of those queries came back with companies that were headquartered in Georgia, but were actually listed on the New York Stock Exchange. And so this propensity for error, we as human beings, especially since the pandemic, right, we like it quick and we like it convenient. But to use your phrase, we do need to look at these technologies with truckloads of salt.
Yeah. And I think there's been a lot of talk. I passed the law school bar exam and some SAT tests and all that kind of stuff. And that's interesting. But it's not smart. It's just very good at parroting information that's been stored in it. And up until now, all that information stopped around 2021. They're in the process of putting more recent data in it, but that was the corpus that they used to train the models. So your Georgia query of headquarters may only be accurate to that point in time. It may not, you don't know. You have to really research it and see who moved in and who moved out of state between then and now. It's also, I think people are looking at this as a way to bridge a talent gap so they can put people that aren't experts in charge of technology. But that's the absolute wrong-headed thing to do, because you've got the lunatics running the asylum then. You've got people that have no way to judge what it's doing in any kind of accurate sense. And it's going to create all sorts of more technical debt for security experts who have to then go in and look at the code and see what it's doing and making sure that it's actually doing what it's intended.
Right. And so that ties back to that desire for convenience. Right.
Right.
So you look at the talent shortage within security and you say, oh my goodness, how do we close that 300,000 plus jobs gap? Right. Oh, well, what I can do is I can hire 10 philosophy majors, right? Give them a couple weeks training and turn them loose with one of these generative AI tools, and all will be well.
Well, I think there's something to be said for a philosophy major, because they're good at asking questions. And I think that's going to be the new skill set it's not so much can you program your firewall, but can you ask the right questions to know whether your firewall is programmed properly or not? So the people that are going to be able to compose these queries that make sense, that is definitely a skill that is, I don't think there's any college curriculum that works for that. I think it depends on someone who's very innately curious and who knows to not take things at face value. So maybe that is a philosophy major. I don't know.
Well, at a minimum, based on what you said, they will likely be able to do well in that role. But you do have the need still for someone with a security background, someone with knowledge of NIST or CIS, right, to be able to say, yes, what you've put together or what you've researched does make sense.
The big thing that I'm worried about from an IT perspective is people that are uploading corporate proprietary data and confidential data. It's like, what the hell are you doing, folks? And so the folks at OpenAI, the people that own this software and Google and Microsoft are saying, don't do that. Use our API. We've got tools that enable you to have your own little private space, and we won't touch that. And if you trust them you believe that and trust them, then we'll be tied to you. I would not get anywhere near using your own data unless you had all sorts of controls in place for that. And you may have to make sure that your data leak protection products are programmed so that it will detect when some salesperson decides to upload his hot prospects database into ChatGPT. You don't want to see that somewhere on somebody else's query. We had already had Walmart, some situation happened with confidential data was uploaded, and they had to put some policies in place to stop that from happening. And that's Walmart, which has thousands of IT people working for them. So what about you if you just have a very small department and you don't necessarily have all those tools? Well, I'd be worried about that.
David, that is a grave concern because, and let's use a school district for example, right?
Right.
So you look at any given school district, I think the percentage that I remember reading was 2% of their IT budget goes towards anything cybersecurity related. Right. So that's $20,000, David, on a $1 million budget.
Yeah, it's nothing.
It's not even a ripple in the pond. Right?
Yeah.
And so yeah. when you think about school districts, small healthcare organizations, local and county government. Right? I mean, there are local governments right now that don't have any sort of backup or redundancy for their network.
Right. Well, and we've already seen all the ransomware attacks that those folks have had. I mean, my goodness, it's a nightmare.
Yeah. So you're talking about unleashing this new technology in a way where, and isn't it interesting, right? We had recently Elon Musk and a few other folks asking for kind of a timeout on,
right,
on ChatGPT and similar technologies. And like, okay, guys, this stuff's moving too fast. We need a moratorium.
Oh, that's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. There was like 25,000 signatories on that letter. As of today, I mean, you're just whistling past the graveyard here, folks. You mean to tell me that all those companies are going to stop what they're doing? Absolutely not. They're all, maybe they wish the other guys would stop so that they could get ahead. So I don't see the point of that.
But I think it speaks to the, and how do I want to say this? So talk to any good InfoSec professional, right? And they will tell you, and it showed up during the pandemic, right? Medical organizations, medical companies, they're trying to come up with a cure for COVID. And what were hackers doing, right? Disrupting research, defacing websites, all kinds of things. So I think we live in two worlds. We live in this world where it's like, hey, people are always going to do the right thing. And it's kind of like a Marvel movie, right? Evil will triumph only to a point, but then the good guys are going to show up and win the day. And in InfoSec, it's not so, right?
Right.
Hackers and people that mean you ill, they're not waiting for you to figure out how to catch up with the technology.
Right. Well, there was a piece in the Washington Post in March, early March, about this AI voice scam. So basically, any bad actor just needs 3 seconds of your voice. So if they're listening to this podcast, you or I could be easily thwarted. What if you got a call or your daughter got a call and it sounded like you and it said, I'm in real trouble. Please wire me some funds. I'm on a trip or whatever. It sounded like you, and it was just taken from the 3-second clip from this podcast. And there's a story about this happening to a teenager, and the AI called her mom and was trying to extort money from the mom. I mean, really, really scary.
Oh, and 5-10 years ago, David, that was fiction, right? That only right. showed up in the movies. Now that is very much a real thing. We had I forget what the app or what the website was called, but there was a thing like a few months back where you could upload photos of yourself and this artificial intelligence would spit out photos of you as a knight on a horse and as
right
on another planet, and people think, oh, that's so cool. There's a reason behind everything, people. And when you open yourself to things like that, you make it that much easier.
Right.
For people.
Well, last night on Jimmy Kimmel, he ran a little clip of Joe Biden saying some crazy stuff. That was all AI generated. I mean, it looked real. It looked like he was actually talking about weird things. It was very funny. And it sounded just like Biden. And I'm sure it took them no time at all to generate that clip. You know, it's just, once we get over the humor parts of it, it's pretty serious stuff.
So David, what does a cybersecurity manager, what does a cybersecurity person do in the face of OpenAI and in the face of this generative artificial intelligence?
I think you first have to get some experience using it, like you and I have talked about. And not just a couple of times, but just spend a couple of minutes each day and see how the corpus has improved and the answers have improved and the UI has improved. Gartner recommends using the Azure version of it. It doesn't really matter. Like whatever version you're feeling comfortable with, sign up for beta with whomever, and just spend some time feeling it out, seeing what it does. I think you have to put some policies in place, as I talked about, to catch confidential data leaving your building, because people are going to want to put all sorts of crazy things in its corpus, and you don't want any corporate proprietary stuff in there. I think you also, just like you need phishing training, I think you need chatbot training. And one consultant suggests using the chatbots themselves to generate sample training messages or rewriting some technical thread information so that it's more generally digestible. I mean, there are ways to use AI in a positive note. That's not all Skynet going to happen. And I think if you haven't started looking at zero trust networking, now is the time to dive into that and start reassessing your security portfolio and whether you need to move some products into zero trust so that you, if you're relying on old school VPNs from the pandemic, and now you, and you refuse to acknowledge the fact that all of your home-based workers' families' computers are now on your corporate network, you, the time is ripe to get Zero Trust up and running.
Now, you mentioned Zero Trust, David, and I'm thinking malware threats, right?
Right.
Is there a particular product you're familiar with or one that you would recommend maybe more highly than another?
Well, I think it depends on where you start in the process. How many security tools do you have in the shed? Are you using a firewall that was last touched in the 1990s? You know, almost every major security company has a Zero Trust product line. Yeah. Cisco, Cloudflare, Checkpoint, Palo Alto. I mean, all the big companies have fairly decent tools for that. But you may not be using them. You may be using something else that they make. So look at what that, the vendors that you're familiar with, look and see if you can migrate to that product.
Oh, and I think along those same lines, right? Don't think that you need to reinvent the wheel, right? If you have an existing relationship with Palo Alto or Zscaler, right? And you're using something in their portfolio, to David's point, all of these players, all of these suppliers, vendors have Zero Trust products in their portfolio. Call up your account manager or your contact to say, hey, I know we've got your threat detection software, or you did a security audit for us. What can we do to bring your Zero Trust products into our security stack? How can you help us better protect our environment?
And I think it's also important for you to really pay attention to your web portfolio. Don't take it for granted just because you use some third-party provider for your website that you've set it up correctly, that you've got it, the access rights right, that you've got adequate password controls on it, so forth. You know, just the basic stuff.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, blocking and tackling.
Yep. It's just, there's a reason why we're still talking about this stuff years in. It's not like, oh, have better administrative passwords. Like, when was the first time those words were uttered? Probably in the early 1980s. And people still don't pay attention to that. They still take it for granted that database administrators haven't written down their password on a post-it in front of their computer. Just stupid things like that.
Yeah, there's, and we didn't really touch on this much this particular episode, but David, you are a prolific writer, blogger. You've written on a number of these things that we've touched on. Mm-hmm. And of course, we'll put those links in the show notes. But is there anything in particular that comes to mind that you want to highlight?
I think I've been following offensive AI technologies, which is like using AI against these people that are trying to do something nasty to you. And I think that research effort is worth paying attention to, because people are trying to combat these things that we've highlighted, these terrible things that we've highlighted, and try to use AI to craft the training messages. You know, I think that's a very good example of being offensive with AI, rather than just using it to help defend your network.
Okay. And so, David, I want to give you the last word on ChatGPT in its current iteration. If you're able to share anything with the folks over at OpenAI, what's something you would want to pass along to them?
Well, I think we're seeing a tremendous trust deficit with the big tech firms. Look, said, trust us with all your data. We won't do anything bad with it. Google said, we'll never be evil. Apple said, oh, we've got everything under control. We're not letting any malware apps into the App Store. All these were major oopsies over time. And I think we've learned that big tech is not trustworthy. Now, OpenAI is not a big company, but they're going to become a big company the rate they're going. And I think we trust us, we're from big tech. I think that's about as useful as trust us, we're from the government. Nobody should believe in that anymore. And so just, I wish they would be more transparent about what they're doing. And I wish they would take the way people are trusting them with their private data with more care. So let's just leave it at that.
Okay. And David, of course, we'll have you back another time, because what you share, what we talk about, is always so rich and so interesting. But until that next time, what is the best way for people to get in contact with you?
So my blog is on strom.com. I'm not doing anything with Twitter anymore because of the smoking hot mess that our dear friend, the spaceman, has turned that place into. It's very, very sad. Email is also a good way to get a hold of me, david@strom.com.
Okay. And so, David, with that, I want to thank you again for gracing us with your time. I appreciate you. You're like my brother from another mother, so.
Yeah, really.
For real. And so, until that next time, thanks for being back.
You're welcome, Sean. Always a pleasure.
All right. And Techamay Presents family, thank you as always for listening. And be sure to tune in next time when we will have another technology expert share their wisdom. Goodbye for now.